Ballad for the Knife Thrower's Partner, Ballad Misterioso, it's called, by David Hodges and Greg Jael, from a CD called Gorilla Parlor Ensemble. It's self-titled CD. That's the name of the group, and it is a Champaign-Urbana-based ensemble that existed back in 2000 anyway, and heard here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. I'm Kevin Kelly. The show's your connection to local performances. And I'm pleased to have you with us this afternoon. Today's going to be a little bit of a departure from our usual approach. We're not really talking about local performances, at least not public performances. We'll be talking a lot about studio performances because my guest today is Mark Rubel, who is director of Pogo Studio. He essentially is Pogo Studio in downtown Champaign. That studio has been open since 1980. And he has recorded many folks you've heard of. The website lists the band Hum, Alison Krauss, Rascal Flatts, Luther Allison, Henry Butler, many others, and work for some really major labels. But mostly for the purposes of today's conversation, Mark is known in these parts as the guy who records folks who live and work in these parts, which is to say folks from in and around our listening area. Many have come and gone. Many are still here. Some, I imagine, are still trying to. Actually, I know for a fact that one is still trying to get his last bit in before Mark takes off, which is the kind of the occasion for today's conversation. Mark is moving to Nashville officially on Sunday to be co-director of something called the Blackbird Academy. It's a professional school of audio in Nashville, built on the foundation of what's called Blackbird Studio. We'll certainly be hearing more about that from Mark. He's with us to share some of his recordings, and that was one of them. Thanks for coming in.
What a pleasure to be here, Kevin.
I think this is, what, third time maybe we've done this?
At least.
But it's been a while.
Yes.
And always a pleasure to talk to you.
And with you.
1980.
I was 3 years old.
Yeah, you were. Yeah, I don't think so.
Okay.
Nice try, though.
Thanks.
Website says over 1,000 recordings. Has got to be well over that by now.
Absolutely.
And of a pretty broad range of music.
And that's one of the things that I most love about it, is a variety. And luckily, being in a community like this, we have such a wide variety of music of all kinds. So it's just it's endlessly fascinating and endlessly enlightening to get to work with all of these different styles of music, and then to apply the styles of recording or musical approach or creative approach of one style onto another.
This recording we just played, you were telling me as we were playing it that this was one of your favorite recordings.
It is.
Recording projects. This whole CD?
It is. I love the music, I love the playing, and I love the sound of a bandoneon.
Yeah, well, I should give credit to all the players here. I mentioned the composers of that tune, the bandoneon. For those who don't know that name, it's the accordion-sounding instrument. It's technically a concertina. I don't know the difference, really, between a concertina and an accordion. Do you?
Neither do I. We'll look it up on
perhaps we shall
the internet.
So that's played by David Hodges. Margaret Gawanowski, well, as she was known then, and blanking on her married name now, the double bass player. Mark Johnson played violin. Robin Kirtan, also on violin. Robin is the director of the Community Center for the Arts in downtown Urbana. And then Greg Jael, guitar and vocals. And he was, until recently, with the band Desafinado. He hasn't come back to them, as far as you know, has he?
I don't know. I got to make some records with them, and those are some of my other favorite recordings I've gotten to do. I mean, I love getting to record everything, and the variety is wonderful, but when I'm cornered and people say, what's your favorite kind of music to record? I think it is acoustic music, because to me, recording is more about capturing people's personalities, and I think they come through in more revealing ways with the acoustic music.
Why do you think that's true?
I think maybe you hear more of their physicality. You hear more of who they actually are and how they move.
Does that suggest that you're maybe for similar reasons or not quite similar reasons, especially partial to analog recording, the analog versus digital as opposed to acoustic versus electronic? Are they related?
They are in a way, but generally with, although when people look at my studio, we have a lot of older stuff there. And sort of as with camera equipment, many of the older microphones are the best. And much of the older technology was built to a higher standard of audio quality. But so people think that we're an analog studio. We do have tape machines and that kind of thing. But mostly I take a hybrid approach. I use whatever sounds or works best for what we're doing, which generally means having a really nice room and really good microphones, many of which are older, and then analog electronics. But we're recording digitally, which gives us just many abilities to edit. It's quiet. It's the media is inexpensive. So it's really a hybrid approach.
Talk a little bit for those, including myself, who are don't really have a good grasp of the recording process. And I guess I mean by that, not necessarily the business of setting up a group to record, but of taking the sound, you know, if you're recording digitally, and then moving it down along the line, if part of it's analog. What is that hybrid approach from beginning to end of the signal, essentially?
Well, the most important part is getting the players comfortable and getting them situated and so forth. The next most important part is choosing the right microphones and getting them in place so that they capture things as well or as close to what we're looking for as possible. And then they run through a mixing board, which is what you might imagine, a giant surface with lots of knobs and flashing lights, which has a dual purpose. It we're able to do all sorts of things, and it makes me look really professional. And
I was wondered how many, I mean, I've seen pictures, well, and I've seen physically so many of these boards that have, I don't know, 20, 30, 40, 50 sliders on them. And I was wondering, do you really use them all or half of them fake?
It varies from project to project. We have a console at Blackbird that's 96 channels. Mm. And in film, we might use hundreds of channels because there will be hundreds of sound cues, sound effects, dialogue, music, etc. But I think at any one time in a ordinary session, we're probably using 10% of the equipment that's there.
Something like that. So the board is a digital board?
Our board is an analog board. In fact, it's a vintage analog board. It was custom built in 1970 for Fantasy Studios in Berkeley, California. It was built essentially to make Creedence Clearwater Revival records. Mm. But it's just been tons of stuff done on it over the decades. And at Fantasy, they did a lot of jazz. So Vince Guaraldi and Sonny Rollins and Tom Waits and all sorts of people have been recorded through it. And of course, I've had it since 1987. So it is very much a vintage analog piece of electronics. And it sounds fantastic, mainly because it's simple and well-designed.
And analog versus digital at that stage means what?
Analog means continuously varying, like the wiggles on a record or the continuously varying magnetism on a piece of analog tape. And digital means code. So we actually encode that into bits. And so with the players, the room, the microphones, and the console, we're doing the record. Up to that point, everything is being done the way it's been since the 40s. And then at that point, it gets digitized, stored in a Macintosh computer, and the computer takes the place of a tape machine, in my case. And mostly I use it for the purposes that you would use a tape machine, which is to store the information, cut it up, splice it, edit it, but we don't have to use razor blades, and we have an undo switch, which is nice. And it has rather more storage, so we can store hundreds of sounds. And then after that, I actually don't do a lot of the mixing and processing in this computer. It kind of reverses the process and then goes back through a mixing board. And so a lot of it is done in the analog world, which you might call the real world.
That sounds like a political statement.
It is.
And the argument against doing it that way would be, or the arguments that you hear?
The arguments in favor of keeping it all digital? Well, there are procedural advantages. The computer has a memory better than a human, and we're able to repeat things and store things, and that way we can go back to them and revise them if necessary. My argument is if it sounds great to begin with, then you probably need less revision. And there are still some sonic advantages to an analog method of recording. But again, I'm not really a strict adherent to one or the other. I'll use whatever technology suits the purposes of what we're doing.
When you first started what is now Pogo Studio. I understand from one of my colleagues here, it was called Faithful Sound Studio.
That's correct. It was named after a Todd Rundgren song.
Okay.
And we started with a little ramshackle house. It was a block from Carl Clinic. And we started because we had the house. We were renting it, and our rent was $100 a month at the time. And we had a small amount of equipment, which we just wired together and called it a recording studio. The house was about 20 feet from some very active train tracks, which is a really bad location to put a recording studio in.
I would think so.
But we just dealt with it. And all of the partners at the time, except for me, were electrical engineers and had jobs. And I had a rather strange liberal arts degree from the University of Illinois. So I got elected to run the studio, and I've been doing that ever since August of 1980.
One of my colleagues here, who I mentioned without name, I will now give a name to. He's Mike Pritchard, who is the sound engineer for this show whenever we do live performances in our performance studio. Made a recording with one of his early bands with you.
Rathskeller.
And I guess one of the tracks was first place winner, it says here, Basement Tapes Competition for something called Rockin' F Magazine in Tokyo, Japan. Third place winner, Unsigned Bands Contest for WLUP-FM, The Loop Radio in Chicago. And this was analog from start to finish, as I suppose everything was then.
That's correct. And a great way to get to work. And we made an awful lot of records and had an amazing time in that house, and then moved downtown in 85.
Well, even though this is not the sort of music that we usually have on this show or that we'll have on for the rest of this hour, I thought I'd actually share. Mike, I guess you gave Mike the reel-to-reel tape, and he just burned a couple of songs on the CD for me.
I probably haven't heard it since
1981. He said, when Faithful Sound Studio was in Urbana, Illinois, you said, next to Carl Clinic. Gavin Stolte is lead vocals here. Mike Pritchard on guitar, Andy Burnett drums, Jay Penn keyboards, Mark Hilton on bass. The song's called Victim of the Light. We'll hear part of it anyway. This is an example of the early sound of Mark Rubel, recording engineer. We're hearing him live on Live and Local. A little bit of a tune called Victim of the Light by the band Rathskeller, which doesn't exist anymore, although at least some of its members are still playing in various groups, including the lead vocalist and the guitarist are in the Gavin Stolte Project. Gavin Stolte, lead vocals on that song, Mike Pritchard, who is one of my colleagues here at WILL, is a sound engineer for our show. at least when we have live performance, playing guitar on that one. It was recorded in 1981 at Faithful Sound Studio. It's now Pogo Studio, but the engineer then is the engineer now, Mark Rubel, who's my guest on Live and Local today, where our programs are made possible with the support of the Friends of WILL and in part by a grant from the Illinois Arts Council, an agency of the state of Illinois. So analog start to finish there. You said at the outset of the show that acoustic music tends to be your favorite to record if you're really pressed to say something like that. But at least my impression anyway is that the bulk of what you do is pop, rock, that sort of thing. True?
Actually, not really.
No?
It is evenly spread, and it's amazing. I just did a record with a band from Republic of Congo, but it's just an amazing variety of stuff. And there's bluegrass, a cappella groups, you name it, death metal bands, and everything in between, folk records, voiceover stuff for film and TV, and I love that. As much as I love music, and even if I had a particular favorite genre of music, I wouldn't want to record the same thing all the time. I really love getting to work with it because music is cultural, and every band is a sort of little miniature culture, and that's part of the thrill of getting to be in the studios. You get to work with them intensively during a productive part of their existence and become part of their culture and learn their jokes and the things that they like to listen to and hopefully contribute to that and then move on to the next thing, sometimes, you know, the next hour.
You have found it really stimulating to be in this particular community. Were you born here?
I was born in Princeton, New Jersey, when my father was at the Institute for Advanced Study there. But I've lived here since I was two, off and on. Mm. I've lived here since 1960, off and on, and went to Leal School and Southside School and Uni High and the U of I. And the next year we started the studio and my band, Captain Rat and the Blind Rivets, which is also still going 33 years later. And now all of a sudden, I'm moving away.
Moving to Nashville.
Yeah.
Which is why we're having you on today. Well, I wanted to, I know that you feel that Champaign-Urbana has been a fantastic place to be doing the business that you're doing. And you told me before we even started the show that the recording we're about to hear is an example of why.
That's correct. I think your show is a wonderful part of this, and I hope that people appreciate the richness and the quality of the musical culture of this town. It is remarkable. It may even be unique, I think. It's just unbelievable how many great musicians we have here in every variety and how much great live music there is, and I'm lucky to get to make records with some of these people. They're so talented, and it's a great joy to me to get to work with them. The fact that everyone in this community could have the chance to hear Donnie Heitler play on any Wednesday night at the Great Impasta is fantastic. And just in general, the variety of... So this recording, which is actually a recording of a later version of the first musical group I was ever in, is, I think, really illustrates that. We'll be right back.
an example of some of the really fine music that you can hear in Champaign-Urbana, specifically Champaign, although they go out and play various places. And they are...
They are the Edison Junior High School Jazz Band.
Or Edison Middle School, as it's called.
Correct.
Right? Yeah.
And the oldest person in that band is 12.
Astounding.
And the youngest person in that band is 10. Most of them are smaller than their instruments. And it's just an incredible example. This is from, I think, 2007. But it's an incredible example of the ambient musicianship in Champaign-Urbana. And when they're playing that well, when they're 12 years old, they're only going to get better and more dedicated as they go through high school and into college. And there have been a number of professional musicians that have come out of that band. Even when I was in the band in 1970, there were amazing musicians there, and many of them have gone on to be professionals and still are. So it's incredible. Sam Hankins was the director at the time. And I remember asking him, how do you get them to play like that? And he said, well, I take professional or college-level charts, I put them in front of them, and I don't tell them they're not supposed to be able to play them. And they do. It is absolutely inspiring and incredible to me. And I think it's also an indication of, as I said, the overall level of quality in this town, that we have great teachers, we have great music stores, we have great radio stations, there are places to play. There's just an overall level of mentorship that supports this kind of work, and that people take it seriously. And we have great musicians here who can act as examples. And for somebody who grows up here, you might think, well, gee, so there are all these incredible musicians everywhere you look. That must be how it is in the world, and if I want to be a musician, I must rise to that level. And they don't realize that, you know, we have so many musicians here: Matt Stewart, Dorothy Martirano, Jeff Helgeson. I'm just pulling people off the top of my head. We have, 50, 100 musicians here that would be stars in any town, no matter how big it is. They really are world-class musicians, I think. And I think that gives them something to aspire to, but it also sets the bar.
Pretty high.
It does.
Mark Rubel is director of Pogo Studio, downtown Champaign, and of course recorded the music you just heard. He's recorded all the music that we're hearing on the program today. So I guess the testimonial you just gave to Champaign-Urbana really forces me to ask the question, why leave?
Well, I didn't expect that I would. I've been very happy here. I've gotten to teach recording to thousands of students since 1985 through Parkland College at my studio. I've been full-time on the faculty at Eastern Illinois University and absolutely love it there. I got to be the audio director and do all the recordings and to teach music technology to wonderful students. And I got to teach the history of rock and roll, which was a real experience and a great time.
That was at Eastern.
Absolutely. And so I'm very happy in Champaign-Urbana, but I have to go. This is the absolute best possible opportunity that I could ever have. It's a sort of tailor-made job for me. I think that of all the things that I do, I also do consulting work and legal work and so forth, but I think of all the things that I do, the most important is teaching. And of course, I teach best the thing that I do the most, which is recording. And this is a chance to teach recording in, well, we call it Music City, but in the middle of Nashville, which really is increasingly becoming the center of the musical world on a global basis. There are unbelievable studios, there are unbelievable players, and the place where I'll be teaching, Blackbird Studio, is phenomenal. It's unparalleled. It really is probably the best recording studio in the world. Mm. It's up there with Abbey Road and so forth. They have 1,400 microphones. There are 8 studios. There are live echo chambers that have motorized ceilings, so you can change the size of the room to get different levels of echo. Everything is at the absolute peak of quality. And to be able to teach this craft and art in uncompromising environments, and also to be surrounded by all these incredible musicians and all the amazing producers and engineers who come through there that we can bring in to mentor our students. That's the way that I think recording education should be done. And I'm glad that we can continue the partly the traditional method of doing it, which is to come into contact with people who do it very well, and but also to give them all the modern developments and so forth. It just is a chance to teach the thing that I love to do at the absolute highest level. And I'm just so thrilled to have that opportunity. So I have to go and do it.
Blackbird Academy, an offshoot of Blackbird Studio.
That's right.
The Academy, of course, is teaching. And it's the Academy. Well, the studio hasn't been around that long.
11 years, which is a relatively long time. It's less than the 33 years I've had mine. But
the Academy, brand new as of, what, February?
That's correct. And our first classes start the last day of September. But it's going to be unlike a lot of recording schools, which tend to be large affairs that, as a result, don't get people quite the attention or the hands-on time that they need. And we're a little bit differently oriented, and I think partly because the teachers, myself and a fellow named Kevin Becca, are working professionals. We have made 1,000 records, and we know the equipment inside and out. So we're not professional instructors. We're professional engineers who teach professionally. And I think that's very important in preparing students for what's really a very complicated and subtle process. And there are a lot of things that people can miss in the process. You know, if you look at an ad for a typical recording school, you will see pictures of equipment, and you'd think that it was all about the equipment and the technology. But it's really, the equipment is really only the tools. And what's important is the interpersonal creative process. And so we will very carefully train them to engage in that process and to be part of all of the subtleties of it, and which entails a lot of how you act and how you collaborate and how you listen. We also train them in business, because most audio engineers are freelance. So they have to be able to handle their own careers and everything that goes with that. And we have to train them in one of the most important things that an audio engineer does, which is how to listen properly and how to be able to listen analytically and really hear the differences between things, and to be able to have an internal concept of what they're going for, so they know then when they get to the equipment part what they're doing.
I wanted to play another recording that you made at Pogo Studio of a group that I don't think it's this recording that I have here, but I have another recording of the group that was provided by, I guess he's the leader of the group. His name is Jamie Ryan. He's the percussion professor at Eastern Illinois University. And this group called Africa West. Is it through your contact with Jamie at Eastern that you end up recording these guys?
It is, and what a thrill it was. They brought in a gigantic marimba. We had it in our control room, which is fairly large, and it took up most of the room. It's an enormous instrument. It must be 7 or 8 feet long.
And it was a 5-octave one?
I guess so.
Yeah. We were just talking about this with another group who had a 3-octave.
Yeah.
And we've had a 5-octave in our studio here, but that's another story.
And there is an instrument on this recording called a gyil, G-Y-I-L. I'm probably mispronouncing it. Gyil. And it's a kind of a smaller African marimba, which has holes in the gourds that have spider webs, the thick spider webs over the holes. So it's a kind of like a combination of a marimba and a kazoo. So I'm partly saying this so people don't listen to this and say this guy's an idiot, because listen to all the distortion on the marimba. It's actually a distortion and fuzziness, and buzziness is part of the instrument. But, they're putting their own spin on various types of traditional African music and African instruments, and it's a different sonic landscape, but at a superb level of musicianship. So it was really a thrill to get to work with them.
Do we know the name of the tune we're about to hear? Track 5.
And I'm going to mangle it's Nor Wangolo.
And I don't suppose they say what that means on there.
That's a good question.
We might look it up.
It's composed by a Ghanaian musician named Pad Dol and arranged by the trio. It's 12-8.
A trio called Africa West, as recorded by Mark Rubel at Pogo Studio, who is with me on Live and Local today here on FM 90.9. That is most of a tune called Something Like Nor Wongolo from Ghana in a performance by a group called Africa West, who were a trio consisting of Josh Ryan, Jamie Ryan, and Ryan Korb. Oddly enough that they should have Ryans in all three of their names. Jamie Ryan, the percussion professor at Eastern Illinois University of Charleston, and this recording by Africa West called Abure. No idea what that means, but it was recorded by Mark Rubel, who is my guest on Live and Local here today, as Mark heads off to Nashville. Those of you, if you don't know his name, just take my word for it that he has been an absolutely invaluable person to so many bands, musical artists, musicians of many, many kinds who have lived and worked in and around Champaign-Urbana, as well as many people who have never lived or worked in Champaign-Urbana but have come to his studio. And he's going to be missed by everybody, which I suppose is an opportunity for you to say, Mark, that even though you're moving to Nashville Sunday, Pogo Studio will go on at least for a while.
That is correct. The studio will remain as it is and is making records every day as it has for the last 33 years. There's a wonderful guy named James Treichler, who is the drummer in a band called Elsinore, one of the best local groups, fantastic band. And he's taken over. So we will be making records here for the foreseeable future. And then we will see at some point, maybe the studio will move with me and my wife and cats to Nashville.
How many cats?
A passel.
A passel. I don't know what a passel is. Is that a number?
I'm being evasive.
Yeah, okay, that's fine. this is Live and Local on FM 90.9. I'm Kevin Kelly. Our broadcast today is made possible with support from the Sousa Archives and Center for American Music, breathing life into the history of our nation's musical past through exhibits, guided tours, and performances at the University of Illinois. More information is available, and visits can be scheduled at 217-244-9309. As soon as that last piece started playing. I don't know what percussion instrument that one was. Was it the Western marimba, or was that one the African marimba? The buzz came in later.
The buzzy one is the African marimba.
But my immediate thought was, how do you decide what microphone to choose for a particular kind of instrument? I mean, you said that you've got lots of vintage ones at Pogo and that Blackbird studio where you're going, I think you said 1,400 microphones.
1,400 plus, and 1,000 of them are vintage, which are generally better.
And so how do you decide, and I'm sure there's a very complicated answer to this, what would be the best mic to record the sounds like what we just heard on that CD?
Well, it is an art, and it mainly involves using one's ears. And then using one's knowledge of the design of microphones and what the different mics sound like on different sources. So I suppose it's like any other art. You just, when you're immersed in it, it becomes instinctive. So in many cases, I do one of the most important things, which I tell my students to do, which not all professional engineers will, which is I listen to the instrument first. I think some people are sort of reflexive and, oh, this is an acoustic guitar. I always use this microphone. I put it 6 inches from here. I have them play and I listen to it first. And then I move my head around and walk around and ask myself a series of questions. You know, do I like it the way it is? In which case, I'll use something that's very high fidelity. Or do I want to alter it in some way? In which case, I can sort of imagine the color that the different microphones that I know will add to it. And so there's all of that. And then that's the scientific part, and then there's the artistic part, which is I try it, and if it doesn't work, I go in and move it around or swap it out and try to keep the context in mind. And I also try not to be so precious about my process that it slows down the creative process. I don't want the artist sitting there while I'm fussing around and twiddling knobs. A big part of the process really is to make the recording system as invisible as possible so that, as far as they're concerned, they're just sitting in a nice room feeling comfortable playing music, and they're not too aware of everything. So we were talking a little bit earlier about headphones, and
that's... Well, you and I were talking off mic.
You and I were talking earlier about headphones, and I think that That's one of my favorite ways to get to record. It's one reason that I like recording acoustic music is because when you can get everyone in the room playing the way that they naturally do, if they're acoustic, that means they do naturally play in the room. I suppose if they're an electric group, they're naturally on a stage with a PA system, so it's a different world. But with an acoustic group, if you can then get a good sound from everyone, they do most of the work themselves, which is to say they balance themselves. If somebody's soloing and they're a sensitive musician, they will lay back and play more quietly. And so that the dynamics and the life of the music tend to translate better. It's much different from when people hear themselves through headphones and they hear everything at the same volume all the time. And that tends to kill their dynamics. They tend to play more the same volume all the time. And because I'm in a recording studio, I can then turn them up when it's time for their solo and turn them down. But there's a difference between the sound of somebody playing at one dynamic being turned up and down and somebody playing harder. When they play harder, the timbre of the instrument changes, the attack of it changes, the overall feel, the way it excites the room. And you can feel that interaction between the musicians better. So my favorite way to record is everybody in the same room with no headphones, just playing naturally.
As opposed to what a lot of studios do, or maybe you may do for certain types of groups or for certain occasions where you, let's say you have a band of five, and each of those five musicians will be in a different room, a separate room, walled off from each other, which I would think would be really weird if you're the musician who's used to, you know, being right with your fellows on stage.
I try to do that as little as possible. One of my philosophies about recording is that the recording should follow the music and not dictate to it, or not dictate to the musicians how they should behave. Obviously we have to make some considerations for the fact that we're in a recording studio, but as much as possible, I like to have everybody playing together in the same room with eye contact, and then I'll deal with isolating the instruments if we need to isolate them. But to my way of thinking, physical isolation amounts to a kind of spiritual isolation, and I don't want to do that to the musicians. So I will make whatever adjustments I need to make in order to be able to capture it as well as possible. But sometimes we don't have a choice. Some of the recording we do is over the internet. I'll get a file from Sweden. We add some parts and we email it off into the ether. I've never met the person or seen the person I'm working with, which is fascinating that we can do that. So it just depends, or sometimes we have one person playing all the instruments, and so we need to be able to record them at different times. So it's, again, I don't go into it with any particularly dogmatic approach. I just try to keep the music and the musicians foremost and tailor the process as much as possible to that.
Going back a little bit to the topic of microphones, would the microphone that you used on the percussion recording that we heard a bit ago, assuming you remember what mic that is, and I'll bet you do, could you possibly use it for the group that we're about to hear next, or the groups, which is a symphony orchestra plus a chorus?
The answer is I can and have. So, yes, the microphones are multi-purpose. There are some that are a little bit more suited to something like a bass drum, which is a specialized use, although part of what I take delight in doing in the studio in order to keep myself from being in a rut is every session I do, I'll try to do something I've never done before. So I'll take this thing that's supposedly a bass drum microphone and put it on a violin or on cymbals and see what it sounds like. But especially in the case of something like that marimba, where we're trying to capture a full-range instrument, if we put a little bit farther from a symphony orchestra, that's an even fuller range instrument in itself. There are different considerations to recording classical music. I think another reason that I like recording acoustic music, and I love recording all kinds of music, but I think another reason I like to record it is that we have a sonic basis for it. In other words, you know what an orchestra sounds like live, and so we have something to compare the recording to. Whereas with electric recording or electronic recording, it's kind of its own thing, which can be nice because we have then the freedom to be abstract or make it whatever it is. But it's my feeling that when people listen to a recording, even if they know that it was something that was programmed or that wasn't played all at the same time, in their mind, they reconstruct a kind of performance. And so I think it's nice when you have a real performance to compare it to.
We're going to hear the Eastern Illinois, I think they call it something, the Eastern Symphony Orchestra, but it's based at Eastern Illinois University. And do you know, no, offhand, is the concert choir, is that what they call it there?
I think so.
And under the direction of Richard Rossi, who also wrote the music.
Yes, he did.
Called?
Of Beauty.
Of Beauty.
And it's a large choir in the Dvorak Concert Hall. And we have wonderful recording facilities there. And it's been, I think it's really been good for me personally and professionally to get to record so much classical music. It's good ear training.
That's a topic and it's unto itself. Here's music by Richard Rossi on Live and Local. And we'll just take that moment to fade out of that piece. It's called Of Beauty by Richard Robert Rossi, who's also conducting the Eastern Symphony Orchestra at Eastern Illinois University and the choirs there. As recorded last year in the Dvorak Concert Hall at the Doudna Fine Arts Center on the Eastern Campus in Charleston by Mark Rubel, who's my guest this hour, this complete hour on Live and Local on FM 90.9. And I think because we have barely even touched the many, many topics that we could touch before Mark takes off, we've conspired that perhaps you'll be back on the show again tomorrow.
I'd love to be. Thank you.
Which would be a lot of fun to share some more of the recordings because it's such a variety. And I've got a lot more questions because I'm, you know, I've probably never told you this, but I seriously considered going into recording engineering myself when I went to college. didn't end up doing it, and sometimes wonder if that wouldn't have been a better idea. But, you know, lives take the turns that they take, and yours is going to take a turn to Nashville.
I know a pretty good school.
Yeah? I was thinking about that while you were talking. The Blackbird Academy is where Mark's going to be. As he said earlier, Pogo Studio in Champaign will continue for the foreseeable future, but it won't be largely run by him, I guess, at the moment.
That's correct.
I referred earlier to somebody who, and I guess there's multiple somebodies who, once they heard you were leaving, scurried to get in their studio and finish certain recording projects. And you happen to have one by the guy I was referring to, who's a guy who's been on this show quite often, named Tom Torino. He plays all kinds of different musics, which has been really fun to explore. Who have we got, and what's he doing on this one?
Well, we're doing a solo CD for Tom, and it's just been one of my great joys to get to work with him. He's just such a wonderful person and has such a wide view of music. So I think it's this on this piece. I think it's Tom, his son Matt Torino, and J.B. Ferris, who is an EIU person, Charleston area bass player. And it was this CD is actually as yet unreleased. We finished mixing it day before yesterday. This piece is called Charlie the Hat, which apparently was Tom's father's nickname for Tom.
Well, he does wear hats, although
I don't know if he did when he was a kid.
Charlie comes from.
Yeah, I'll have to investigate more, but apparently his dad called him Charlie the Hat.
And Tom Torino, so that's the name of the piece. Mark, it's been a pleasure today. Look forward to having you back tomorrow, and we'll explore lots of other questions about recording. And I suppose if anybody wants to ask Mark a question, you could, and you're listening right now, you can send me an email if you want. My address is KM, as in Michael, KELLY1, at illinois.edu. Spell out illinois.edu. KMKelly1 at illinois.edu. If you have a question about recording you want to ask Mark, I'll ask it on tomorrow's show. I've never done anything like that, but who knows?
Fabulous.
It's Live and Local on FM 90.9, 90.9 WYL FM and HD Urbana with Translator, W293 AF Danville, NPR Classical Music, and more for Central Illinois. We're a member-supported service of the College of Media at Illinois. Charlie the Hat.